It's In the Moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Steve Zwemke, filling in for Lori Walsh. Monday evening, Dr. Laura Colmenero-Chilberg presents Madness, Women in Pop Culture on the Black Hills State University campus in Spearfish at 6:30. Her presentation looks at two pieces of historical literature and then focuses on contemporary television and film. She discusses roles, relationships, and social structure. Laura Colmenero-Chilberg is a professor of sociology at Black Hills State University. Doctor, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. Now, your Rapid City or RC Speaker Series event is not necessarily a who's who of women in pop culture and not a focus of Madonna did this or Kim Kardashian did that. It's more a sociological or scientific approach to things like roles, relationships, and social structure. Would you provide a brief preview or overview of your presentation and explain what you hope the takeaway is for the audience?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. My research has always looked at gender and inequality, and one of the things that was interesting to me, I also have a history, an academic history in literature, was that so often we find characters who are mad throughout our literature, our popular culture. And I started looking at that, and I realized that very often this idea of madness has been used to control women. And so I took a look at a couple of very well-known classic books. I took a look at Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre, and then I looked at a short story called The Yellow Wallpaper. And then I thought, well, okay, that's what it was like during the Victorian period, how they were using these images of women. And I thought, well, let's take a look at present day. Do we still see those kinds of images where women are controlled and stigmatized by this label of madness? Or are things beginning to change a little bit because our world is so much different today than it was back during the Victorian period? So I took the time to take a look at Tennessee Williams' very, very famous play. And then I looked at A Streetcar Named Desire. Then I looked at the two Kill Bill movies. And I looked at Penny Dreadful, which is a series that finished up this year on Showtime. And what I found is that madness is still being used to identify women as being incompetent or irrational. But there are some changes in that, and maybe not for the better, because we're beginning to see that kind of stigmatization also used against males.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you about that, too. Because of these similar portrayals in literature and on the screen, does it become part of our psyche or thought process that women or men, when the roles are similar, are mad, crazy, sinful, or aloof? Is that something that just kind of seeps into our thought process that's hard to take out of there?
Sure. With women, it's been all the way through history. And part of what I talk about in my presentation is this history of the identification of madness. And historically, it was considered to be what's called hysteria. And hysteria was uterus-based. So it was the identification of women from ancient times up until, the whole idea of this hysteria, a women's illness, was still into the late 1800s, early 1900s. And we still, in not just popular culture, but in just common everyday kind of conversation or things that we see on the news, we hear about people that, women are not quite rational enough, or they become easily emotional or hysterical. So we still see the remains of that in how we define what women's character is like and whether or not they're trustworthy to have positions of power in American society. So, yeah, it becomes part of the way that we look at women and how we define women.
Sure. When you talk about in the news, are you talking about like mainstream news, or what kind of news are you talking about?
Oh, I think mainstream news, that we see those kinds of things. We've just been through a really contentious political process as we, as we elected a new president. And although I don't think that we heard specifically people pointing fingers and saying, well, you know, Hillary Clinton shouldn't become president because she's mad. But I do remember the last time that she ran interviewing men and women and saying that, you know, women were not really emotionally capable of being in these positions of power. So even though I don't think I heard it in the mainstream news this time around, but I know I did when she was running against Barack Obama.
And it's changing.
It really is changing.
And it seems Sarah Palin kind of fell under that same umbrella back when she was a vice presidential candidate.
Sure. And did we take a look at the other candidates there, how much they spent on their clothes, or whether or not they were wearing lipstick, those kinds of things that are sort of what do we look like and how do we behave? We don't tend to look at those issues quite as much when we are considering whether or not we support a male candidate, where we do with a female candidate much more so.
Dr. Laura Colmenero-Chilberg is our guest. She's a professor of sociology at Black Hills State University in Spearfish. And on Monday, she presents Madness, Women in Pop Culture, on the Black Hills State campus at 6:30 local time. You've covered such a large time span in your study for your presentation, and you do, even though it's a large span, you focus on just a few individual items here, the books and the film. How did you arrive at your chosen subjects for this presentation?
Well, since the presentation is such a short one, I was selective in, and since it's for the general public, I was quite selective in which ones that I chose. Jane Eyre's book, Charlotte Bronte's book, Jane Eyre, is well known to people. They may have seen movies of it. Masterpiece Theater has had a Jane Eyre. They may have read it when they were in school. And then The Yellow Wallpaper is also a short story that's often read in high school. Streetcar Named Desire, well-known, piece of literature. Right. And then, of course, the Kill Bill movies and Penny Dreadful are present day. So when I selected, I selected keeping in mind that it was going to be a popular audience, that I wanted them to have some knowledge of what it is I was going to talk about. Those are the ones that I identified. There are, of course, other pieces of literature that we could identify, other television programs, etc.
Mm-hmm. What are some ways of changing our perceptions? Can we do that on our own? And is the issue of the way we see women in pop culture an issue so troublesome that writers and artists and filmmakers need to take a close look at what they produce?
How you change this kind of thing, I think, is one of the simplest things is becoming aware of this. You know, when you're aware that you're reading a piece of literature or you're watching a television program or a play or a movie, knowing that these kinds of messages are there is useful. It's helpful. Once you identify that, then you can identify what kinds of repercussions it might have. As I said, things are getting much better. But we do tend to still see in a lot of popular culture, television and movies in particular, that the primary characters, the most powerful characters, are still male characters. And I do think that they're aware of this in Hollywood, And there are filmmakers who are attempting to sort of break the pattern a little bit. Not that males shouldn't be main characters in our works of literature and movies. They should be. It would just be nice to see a more equivalent kind of representation of women. And we're moving in that direction. They're making attempts. But, you know, still, the kinds of movies that we tend to buy the tickets for tend to be those big kind of blockbuster movies that traditionally have male characters as their leads. Mm-hmm. So changes are being made. I'm very hopeful.
Yeah. At the outset, you brought up gender and equality, inequality. Do you see patterns in other areas outside of pop culture where it's similar, whether it's in employment or whether it's in the media or things like that? Do you see the patterns similar to that of which we're looking at in pop culture?
Oh, sure, sure. You know, we've had some very traditional kinds of role scripts for men and women, and women's role script has predominantly been that of nurturer, and of, you know, to be that nurturer, you need to be that emotional person to take care of the domestic environment, where traditionally men have been the ones who've been adventurous and go out into public. So it's taken a while for women to begin to enter into the business world at equal levels. Women are still paid, I think the most recent data that I heard, 77 cents on a dollar. Women still have trouble getting to the highest levels of the boardrooms. Things are working in that direction, but we still see this played out in real life, in the economy, you know, education. An right. expectation of having a woman as a kindergarten teacher rather than a man, because we expect the nurturer to be there. So we do see it in a lot of different places.
If I could take a turn here, I'm really fascinated by some of your work, and some of it sounds like it's been very fun for you. Just a couple mm-hmm. of years back, you attended the 8th Annual Global Fear, Horror, and Terror Conference in Oxford, England. You've yeah. done some writing and editing on topics that I know would interest a lot of people. I'm wondering, sure. what's it like to sit in on one of Dr. Colmenero Chilberg's classes at Black Hill State?
Well, you know, a lot of my classes need to be very standard. I teach things like social stratification and urban sociology, and there's a lot more to sociology than the one little narrow strip that that I like to write about. But I do have a tendency to, if appropriate, when it's appropriate, to pull in popular culture kinds of examples. Students very much respond to being able to take the information in my class and apply it to things that they're familiar with.
Right.
And pop culture is so, so broad, and everybody participates in it, that it sometimes gives me the opportunity to use that kind of information to illustrate maybe some more difficult concepts. So, yeah, we talk about it here. I am going to teach, actually, this fall, an honors colloquium on women in madness. So we'll do a whole semester on it.
Very interesting. Dr. Laura Colmenero Chilberg has been our guest. You can join her for Madness, Women in Pop Culture, Monday at 6:30 p.m. at Black Hill State University, part of the RC Speaker Series. Dr. Colmenero Chilberg, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
It takes a steady hand and hours of practice to get the wool ready for that cozy winter sweater. Nearly a dozen sheep shearers from the U.S. and Canada gathered at the Black Hill Stock Show for the National Sheep Shearing Championships. Contestants shared details about their careers as sheep shearers with SDPB's China Lockett.
One, two, three, shear!
Contestants reach into metal containers and pull their sheep onto stage. The animals are on the ground, tucked between the shearer's legs. The crowd cheers as the shearers turn on their razors.
She's
The sheep stay quiet as contestants shave piles of wool onto the stage floor. Judges stand close to watch the details. They time each contestant and look for a clean, even cut. The competitors all have their own story. Some, like Mike Higgins, have grown up around shearers and have practiced their whole lives. He says he's been traveling to farms across the Midwest for nearly 17 years.
Well, I got into it because we had sheep as kids, and my dad used to shear, my great-grandpa used to shear. I just like it because I travel all over and just meet all these nice ranchers. I like the people I work with and work for.
Higgins says he runs a few shearing crews from trailers.
I have a trailer up in North Dakota, just a smaller one, and we have 2 5-man trailers down here in South Dakota. We go around from like Belfouche, area Newell, up into Headinger, out into Wyoming and stuff. Just keep 10 guys busy for like 4 months of the year.
The team also shears lambs in the summer, so they are busy year-round. Some shearing crews involve more than shears. Leanne Brimmer is a professional wool handler. She sorts the sheep's coat by size, texture, and quality as it's being shaved.
My job is to work with the shearer to make his job easier. And at the same time, I am trying to get the producer a better price for his product. So by sorting off the inferior parts of the fleece, then that fleece wool can go into a higher price valued line.
Brimmer says her team travels to farms around the world to work during sheep shearing season. She says they're like independent contractors.
It's a good way to travel. You get to see the world, you get to see new places. And a lot of it's the people I work with. The guys I work with are a great bunch of guys. You have a laugh, day goes a lot quicker, you can all make good money.
Brimmer says they will shear anywhere from 10 sheep to a couple thousand, depending on the farm. She says shearing is a necessary chore, not only for the health of the animal, but also for the product.
They do better without multiple years of wool on. It's for their benefit, too, that you take the wool off. That fleeces get so heavy, it weights them down. They'll get on their back. That'll put pressure on their internal organs, and it'll kill them, actually. They get maggots, all kinds of parasites.
Sheep have different types of wool depending on the climate they live in. Weston Hillstead is a contestant from Minnesota.
As far as the sheep go, today was kind of a fine wool day. They're not like your Iowa, Minnesota sheep. They're coarser wool. These are Western sheep, so they have really fine, dense wool. These are what goes into socks and nice garments. So it's going to be a little tougher to get your comb into them. It's going to be a little bit slower than what you might see in the Midwest with our sheep, but they're still a pleasure to shear because you're shearing something that really is going into something great.
Hillstead has worked as a shearer for nearly 7 years. He says he dropped out of college to pursue his dreams and travel the world shearing sheep.
When I was younger, like when I was in high school and stuff, I thought the traveling was the coolest part because I grew up inner city with my elementary days. And then my uncle who got me into it, it got me away from the city and I got to go see other places and it was really exciting when I was a kid.
He says this year was one of his best performances in a competition. Hillstead placed third in the intermediate shearing category and Higgins placed second in professional. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm China Lockett in Rapid City.
Thanks, China. Coming up, we're joined by Jenny O on Moment in Sound. But before we go to break, SDPB's Chris Loffery shares some South Dakota events in the arts.
Thank you so much, Steve. Today, at 3 o'clock until 5 o'clock, Cardboard Chaos, that happens at the Matthews Opera House and Arts Center. Tomorrow, Frontier Main Street, Children's Exhibit Open House. That takes place in Aberdeen, Dakota Prairie Museum, from 1 o'clock until 4 o'clock. All of these events are free. On Sunday, Compassionate Sioux Falls Living Library at Siouxland Library's Oakview Branch in Sioux Falls. That's on Sunday from 2 until 3:30. For more events in and around your area, be sure and go online to sdpb.org/calendar.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Steve Zwemke filling in for Lori Walsh. Los Angeles-based Jenny O is currently on tour with Robert Ellis. They played at Total Drag Records in Sioux Falls last night, and we're glad that they've stopped by our Sioux Falls studio before heading to the Turf Club in St. Paul for another show later tonight. Jenny O has released a pair of EPs along with her debut full-length album, Auto Mechanic, and later this spring, She hopes to release another album titled Peace and Information. We'll visit about that this morning. First, Jenny O, welcome to In the Moment and welcome to Sioux Falls.
Thank you.
Is this, was last night your first concert in South Dakota?
Yeah, it sure was.
It was. Have you been through the state before?
I can't remember. I've driven a lot.
Yeah. We have lots of exciting things to talk about with Jenny O, but would you start us out with a song this
sure.
morning?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Jenny O from Los Angeles in studio with us. Moment in Sound on In the Moment on SDPB Radio this morning. Jenny, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Long Island, New York.
So, and that's where you went to school as well for college? No.
Sorry. I went to college. I did 2 years at New Paltz. It's a New York State school, like okay. near Woodstock okay. for jazz. And then I transferred 2 years at SUNY Purchase, which is just above the Bronx.
That's what I was curious about. You're upbringing is a little bit different than Robert Ellis, who will have him after you. He kind of left school to do his thing. You actually went to school to do your thing. It sounds though like you really got a nice realm of experience. You mentioned jazz and other genres. How is it that you ended up kind of playing what you're playing now?
Well, I think my biggest influence still to this day is my father, who loves rock and roll, classic rock and classic pop, and though has always been in cover bands and still is. So I grew up on the Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Stones and, you know, Motown and all the 60s stuff. And that's my roots. So when I got into jazz, that was my like exploration in high school. And of course I got into more modern stuff. But once I was starting to find my real sound, it just fell back to my roots, felt like absolutely natural. So those are my references. I don't know that it actually sounds like that in the end, but that's where my roots are.
Why the move to Los Angeles?
Well, it's just so nice there. I was living in New York City after college for a few years, and this man, this investor, this Wall Street guy, paid for me to make my first record, which was a totally weird thing that happened. And I got flown out to Los Angeles to make a record, and that record never came out. It was the most money anyone's ever given me to do anything, and then that thing never came out. And since then, I've had to work really hard to do anything, which is fine and totally the way things work. But I got to go to Los Angeles and make this record, and while I was there, I met all these cool people and had all these wonderful experiences that was way more in line with what I wanted to do musically. And so I thought this is where I want to be. And that's where I met Jonathan Wilson, who later produced my next two records. Yeah. And I really do love the weather and architecture.
Sure. I definitely want to talk about Jonathan Wilson. My impression of Los Angeles, tell me if I'm wrong, I would guess that there are tens of thousands of people out there that play guitar, would love to record an album, and that the competition is just so tough to be heard and to find a stage on which to play, just to be seen and heard. Is that correct, or is it maybe not that tough?
I would assume so. Yeah.
But you have investors.
No, I don't. I do not. But to be clear, I actually, as soon as I said that, I was like, I should not have said that on the radio. I do not have investors. About 16 years ago, Someone took a chance on me, and that was a bad chance.
It's still an interesting story, though.
Yeah.
No. Well, let's talk about Jonathan Wilson. He worked with you on your first full-length album, Auto Mechanic, which I love. As a matter of fact, we played a song off that a couple of days ago on the air to promote your appearance today. He's been credited in music media with kind of a resurgent or a boom in the Laurel Canyon music scene. Mm-hmm. Explain the Laurel Canyon music scene.
Well, I think the original Laurel Canyon music scene was in the, what I assume was probably 68, 69, 72, you know. The LA songwriters that were in are most notorious for are like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, and Joni Mitchell, and Jackson Brown, and I know Jim Morrison had a house there, and you know, there was like a rock scene at that time, and that was the Laurel Canyon scene, and that Laurel Canyon is a really cool little spot. It's just above Hollywood. It's basically Hollywood, but there's a mountain range that runs right through the center of Los Angeles. And as soon as you hit the hill, that becomes Laurel Canyon right in Hollywood. And there's all these cool like hippie houses, you know, and cabins and It's amazing. You can actually live in like a little wooded area in a cabin and you're right in Hollywood. I mean, I can't afford it, but one could. And I'm sure then it was a lot cheaper. It was pretty cheap. And so Jonathan, I think, had like a little shack. He rented a little like shack in Laurel Canyon about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. He's probably when he landed there. And he had a little luthier shop out of the back.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he did for a long time, with built guitars for people. And then was recording there as well. So he started making his albums as well as a couple Dawes records. And I'm not sure all the records that he made in that house, but he used to have these monthly jam sessions on Wednesday nights, jam parties. They were kind of like whoever was in town on tour or whoever was lived in LA would kind of come by, and it would be like a little invite text you'd get, and it was come through, and it was a party, and it was, they would jam classic tunes, Grateful Dead songs, yeah, the Beatles songs, like, and just the best players around today were playing. So this is what I walked into when I was first flown out to Los Angeles. Someone invited me to one of these parties. And I walked in and was like, oh, I'm home. I had been hanging out in Brooklyn with like people making electronic like blips and bleep music, which I never identified with.
Yeah, for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with Jonathan Wilson, he released a CD, Gentle Spirit, in 2011, which was huge on NPR, got rave reviews. And as I was telling you before we went on the air today, I went out to buy that right away. And the first two times I tried to buy the CD, I couldn't find it in stores. It was sold out. And finally, on my third try, I got it. But Jonathan is amazing. We'll talk a little bit more and also about your upcoming CD. But could we hear one more song?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead and set it up.
I need to make one disclaimer. My voice isn't always so hoarse. I just got over the sickness that every single person in this country has had right now.
We're there too.
So I apologize. Oh gosh, I didn't even actually think about what I was going to play.
Once again, Jenny O from Los Angeles in our studio at the University of Sioux Falls on Moment in Sound on In the Moment.
As you were, my darling, in the fine, fair morning, you can turn me on. Don't worry if you wear me out. I'm ready like a storm, gold miner. As the road unravels, you turn from your travel with your tall hat on. Oh, mercy, yeah, you look so good. I'm ready. It's a mood I've been looking for. Mm-hmm.
Jenny O from Los Angeles, thank you so very much. I wish we had more time today, but before we go, we definitely need to talk about Peace and Information, your upcoming album. And you can go to Jenny O's website, by the way, jennyo.com for more information on that, but also a Kickstarter project where you can pre-order, is that right?
Yeah.
And this is also, you're working with Jonathan Wilson again.
Yeah. We actually already recorded the record.
Okay.
And as I aforementioned, I do not have an investor, so I pay for my own record.
I really like what I heard on the promo trailer that you have on your website, and there's a song on there that definitely sounds like it's got some Jonathan influence on there, that California sound. Does the album as a whole take you in some different directions at all?
Than the previous one?
Right, right.
Maybe just a little bit. It does kind of continue the soundscape of Auto Mechanic, my previous full length.
That's good news.
Oh yeah, it's definitely part two of Auto Mechanic.
Cool.
There's a little bit more. We had a little bit more synths on there, tasteful synths, and we chose to do that a little bit. I mean, they're not even like modern synths. They're like the first synths that were made, but we went a little more modern, and there's a couple more like Latin-y songs on there, which is more my thing. But and I'm making this sound like a record. It is not. But yeah, it's a continuation of Auto Mechanic.
Come back to South Dakota and see us soon, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Jenny O, it's been a great pleasure to have you in studio with us for a moment in sound. Again, thank you very much. We're back on In the Moment, and this is Moment in Sound. Robert Ellis found an arts-friendly pocket in Houston, Texas, and as a teen put in the hard work to get noticed by other musicians. Whiskey Wednesdays gave Ellis and his mates a chance to hone their skills in their early stages. Fast forward to now, Robert Ellis followed up his critically acclaimed CD, The Lights from the Chemical Plant, with his fourth album, which is self-titled. He has already made one trip through South Dakota with his full band to play his latest music. And this time, he's back, played at Total Drag Records last night. And Robert, thank you very much for stopping in.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Now, first of all, tell us who your mate is here.
Oh, I've actually never met this guy. The guy sitting next to me, I found him in the parking lot. I think he's a student here at the university, and I've just recruited him to play guitar with me. What's your name?
Kelly?
His name is Kelly Doyle.
Sounds good. You're great at meeting other musicians.
We just gravitate towards one another.
And you know what? I bring that up, too, because I understand you spent part of yesterday with a good friend of our show, Burlap Wolfking.
Oh, yeah. He's so sweet. They opened for us last time we were here.
Nice.
And he put together the show, and I definitely have him to thank for why we started coming here and why we've continued to come here. This is one of my favorite places.
Thomas actually did the very first Moment in Sound. This is something that's been new since the start of the year that we've added to our Friday program here on In the Moment. It's really been great fun for us, and I hope you guys enjoy it too today. One of the things Thomas told me last month was he prefers to be known as a songwriter above anything else, not a singer, songwriter, musician. He prefers songwriter. How do you feel about that as it pertains to yourself?
I don't care. It doesn't matter at all. People think whatever they want to think. You know, we could work our hardest to make really good narrative-driven story songs, and people could comment about what we're wearing. You know, it's all about where people are, and we're in the entertainment business. Yeah. So it's not really our task to choose what things they remember, as long as they remember something.
Well, let's get the ball rolling, too, here. Are you guys ready to play a selection for us?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it.
We're going to play a song called Drivin'. Kelly? Mm-hmm. One, two, three.
not supposed to do. Just drive around the fairgrounds another time or two. Where am I gonna go when the girl behind the counter at the coffee shop gets tired of me hanging around? Nothing left to say, trying to get away. I'm bored out of my mind, and I've changed all the light bulbs and had this conversation about 3 million times or more. Guess I'll walk around the grocery store again. Oh, this don't feel like living, it's just surviving. I ain't going nowhere. Oh, I'm just driving. I know that you're upstairs, and I'm down here watching television, trying to make some sense out of the way it feels to be so close to you. Feels so far away. Oh, I just wish you'd go to bed without the expectation that I'd come up there and say something to help you feel like things aren't such a mess. I'll just sweep the floor and clean the desk, put up the dishes and then fold some clothes, I guess. Oh, this don't feel like living, it's just surviving. I ain't going nowhere. Oh, I'm just driving.
Much Robert Ellis here in studio on Moment in Sound, in the moment on SDPB Radio. I didn't realize how the time is sneaking up on us here too. We probably have time for a shorter song in just a second before we close. One of the things I wanted to ask you, traveling with Jenny O, are there things that you're learning from each other as far as maybe songwriting or just the business in general?
Oh yeah, it's always educational, I think, to tour with other musicians and friends, and we're constantly talking about, you know, how we're getting taken advantage of and what ways to stop it and things like that.
How did you meet?
I believe we met in Nashville the first time through mutual friends. We have a bunch of the same friends. She lives in Los Angeles.
Sure.
Has a lot of the same friends as us.
Nice.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, going back to that artsy area in Houston that you connected with in your younger days, how important has that been throughout your career? It was kind of a risky move, it sounds like.
To what?
When you moved to Houston and at such an early age.
Oh, I mean, yeah, everything is risky. Anything worth doing is risky. Anything worth investing in is, the odds are, it's just the way of the world, you know. The higher potential earnings you have, the more risk there is involved. Mm-hmm. And that's just like anything. But I think that people that make art and play music don't, you know, we don't really think about the risk as much because there's no other option, you know. Yeah. I think that we'd be very, very unhappy doing anything else, and I don't think we'd be able to make it work, you know.
Yeah, I wish we had more time. I want to remind our listeners too to stay tuned for NPR's coverage of President Trump's press conference with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, and that's going to be at the top of the hour. Robert, thank you very much for coming back to South Dakota. I hope we see you guys again soon. I know you have a lot of fans here, and if you would just go ahead and play us out today.
We'd love to play you another tune.
Thank you.
Can I have an E, Kelly? This is a big part of playing music, guys. We have to tune. This song is called California.
Every road leads away from the things you wanted. Which way to go when every memory is built like a home that's haunted? Closing your eyes, dream of a place where things turn out the way you plan. Everything dies. Dream of a place where the living resides again. And she says, maybe I'll move to California with the unbroken part of my heart I still have left. Maybe I'll fall in love again someday. I'm not gonna hold my breath. I'm not gonna hold